Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine BP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Good morning, Dr. Most.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Well, you know, because we're friends, every time I see, when I'm doing preparations for the show, for the week, if I see a health story, I dive in. I dive in because I want to know stuff because you're my friend. And I saw this one and the headline caught my eye. How often should I pee in a day? And I didn't know this because I've never counted. The average person goes 6 to 8 times a day, but 4 to 10 is perfectly normal. You agree or disagree?
I totally agree.
I feel like I should count now.
I'll start a tally. I assume you went after your ride in. I got one down for you right now.
No, I went when I got up. When I got up this morning, I did not go. I've not gone since I've been here.
You did not go. Okay.
No.
All right. So I'm keeping
track.
Catch up.
Let's go.
Is there an app? There's got to be an app for
that. There
probably
is. Yeah.
Well, you think about it. The day started at midnight. Here it is 6:40. We're 6 hours and 42 minutes into the day,
you're
and I've only peed once. How am I going to get the other 7 in?
Now, once we part ways today, you're going to have to keep me updated on how often
I'll text you every time I pee. Yeah.
Keep the tally
absolutely
going.
No question about it.
I'm guessing you're more of a 7 or 8.
I'm thinking I'm 10.
Yeah, how many times a night?
Drinking a lot of water.
So. How many times a night do you get up?
Oh, wait, I did get up in the middle of the night.
See?
So that's 2.
That one.
We're already up at 2. See, good thinking, Mayor.
Yeah, I was up at 2:30 a.m. Well, the reason Mary knew is because I call her.
Don't call me because I don't get up.
I can't wait for Sandberg's
total.
Her employee review when she's like, "What are the things you do?" Well, I tally how often Steve pees. Okay, we got that. That's you got a 3%
important part
raise
of the job, Doc. We were going to get to this last week. We ran out of time, but I no longer have an appendix. Mine was taken when I was 10 years old.
Good for you.
And is the appendix something that any of us need, or should we start whipping them out right now?
Yeah. I'm not sure we should start getting rid of them right away, but really it's it really has no function. Some people feel that it might just hold good bacteria for times when we have a viral infection and it reseeds the gut. But for the most part, we really don't know why it's there and we really don't know what it does.
Do you think this is one of those things, as a Christian, this is one of those things where I think, well, you know, God probably just, ran out of ideas, putting people together, going, oh, you know what? It's already in. Leave it. It's not going to do anything, but just leave it. There's been studies on this forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And they continue to come back with the same information. It doesn't do anything.
Right.
But it can cause problems.
It can cause problems. Absolutely. You obviously had appendicitis when you were 10 years old. And I bet you if you polled the entire group there with you, you probably have maybe one, maybe two others who lost their appendix at a young age.
Well, let's check. Anybody else lose their appendix?
No,
nope.
I have mine.
My question would be how many times I thought that I did, and
turned out it was a hot dog.
Yeah, it turned out it was a bad burrito. But it seems like that to me is a question I have for you, Doc Mose, is what is the symptoms of appendicitis just for parents of 14, 15 year olds who don't want to go to their part time job?
Exactly, or have a test that day.
Mm-hmm.
But the appendix is a little 4-inch outpouching off of our large intestine, essentially. And it's down in our, if you put a square on your stomach, it's in the lower right-hand square. And what usually happens is you start to have pain around your belly button, and then it goes down into the lower right-hand corner. Worse when you push on it, let go. It can also cause discomfort. People often won't want to eat anything. They won't want to move because movement will cause discomfort. Matter of fact, some people even on their way to the hospital, they'll hit bumps. We'll ask them, when you hit a bump in the car, oh, yeah, I felt that each time. And when you examine them, they do not want you to push on it, and they do not want to move.
And they also don't want to eat, right?
They don't want to eat. It's one of my favorite questions for little kids, even at 8 o'clock in the morning. What's your favorite food? Pizza. If I had a piece of pizza, would you eat? I don't want anything to eat right now.
Now I know you got something. Now, the great danger here is a burst appendix, right?
Correct. Yeah, the infection can, it's this little tube, so as it starts to swell, if it doesn't drain, it thins the skin to a point where it'll burst, and you'll have an infection, especially in your abdominal cavity, which in many cases can be severe, and other cases can be treated fairly conservatively.
Does the pain increase with a burst one? Is it worse?
No, it's actually kind of interesting. they initially have a lot of pain, and then when it bursts, their pain goes down, but they get sicker. They start to have a fever, and then they will start to get the pain coming back because the pain is initially from too much water in a water balloon as it spreads, and then once it bursts, it's like, oh, I kind of feel better.
But that's poison, but now, right? That's poison in your system.
Exactly. Now you have bacteria that's not contained, and it's all over your intestine.
Now, there is a question in the medical community, and this is really what this new study is about, is about what the treatment, whether it's better to get in and cut open and have surgery or to have a course of antibiotics. There's arguments on both sides.
Absolutely. You know, when you think about it, well, we just said it's an infection, so how do we treat infections? Well, we treat infections with antibiotics. Now, this study in Finland showed that if we gave them antibiotics, for some cases, that we don't need to do surgery. The bad thing about the study was that the surgeon got to choose who got antibiotics and who got surgery. So obviously they would take the sicker ones to surgery, and they would take the ones that they could feel might be able to be treated with antibiotics and let them be treated with antibiotics. Still very controversial, because even in Finland when this study was done, the standard of care was to take the appendix out.
So that study is, I don't know that it's flawed, but it's incomplete.
Yeah, it's definitely incomplete. I think what it shows is that those minor cases where you're kind of on the fence back and forth and are totally unsure if it's a full-blown appendicitis, you may be able to watch them and treat them with antibiotics. One of the ways to diagnose is a great physical exam. The other way is CAT scans. And we're trying to get away from using CAT scans, especially in young children, because it's a lot of radiation in an area of their body that's very important.
What's the link, the positive link to Parkinson's?
That one's probably even more interesting. You know, this was a study that we talk about big data in the past, and we've talked about how important it is to get as much as we can as far as big data. And this is in Sweden. In Sweden, had 1.7 million people that they were following. And what they noticed was those individuals who had their appendix taken out at a young age had a 20% lower chance of having Parkinson's in the future.
That's a big deal.
Well, it is a big deal, and now people are going, you're crazy. What does the appendix have to do with a movement disorder in my brain? Mm-hmm. So it's like, that doesn't make any sense. But what we found is that in healthy people, then, when we took out their appendix, we looked, and there's a protein in there that's actually one of the proteins that we think is a big portion of what causes Parkinson's.
That's why some medical advances take so long, because sometimes things happen because they happen when they happen. Huh? How's that for deep?
Yeah. And what the ability of now is that we get to take this look at this big data and allows us to compare large populations. Because no one's going to say, wait a second, you know, you had Parkinson's. Did you have your appendix taken out as a child? But the dilemma now comes, well, wait a second. Should we be treating more individuals with surgery, or should we be treating them with antibiotics? Well, if you have a 20% lower chance of having the risk of Parkinson's in the future, many are going to say, hey, I know surgery has a risk, but I'd like that removed.
Yeah, I don't need my appendix anyway.
Yeah.
Now we can give it away on the air,
right.
Just like Sandberg's tooth.
Prize list this week is amazing.
Doc, if you can hang around, we have some other questions for you of a general nature, if you don't mind, plus an app that was just sent to me by a helpful texter that I think is important in regards to your pee-pee. Stand by for that. Dr. Kevin Moss with us. Yeah, all right, Doc. I'll get to this app in just a second, but want to clear something up so we understand it. Texter, Doc, you said pressing on the appendix relieves pain. When I was trained as an EMT, we were taught pressing relieved the pain, but when you quickly release the pressure, the pain would be awful. They called it rebound pain, and it was used to differentiate between an appendix or other abdominal issues. Has that changed?
No, correct. So when you press, it causes pain, and when you release, it causes pain. So you press this inflamed organ down, it causes some discomfort, and when you let go really quickly, we don't just ease, we remove our hands quickly, and then that organ now, that the appendix now moves, and that causes what we call rebound pain. Similar to, as I said, when you're driving over in a car,
yeah,
and any kind you bump, It, when any time that that thing is moving, and if you force it to move, it's going to cause discomfort. So he's absolutely correct, and I apologize if I misspoke.
No, I think that's just clear.
I'm going to say don't push on that appendix if you're having a problem.
Well, you have to know what it is. That's why the doctors are in there poking you.
You'd be a great doctor. Just avoid it.
Yeah, I just don't.
Well, the last thing you would want to hear as a doctor is people complaining about how sick they are.
Exactly.
Kelly's in Arlington Heights. Kelly, what was your question?
Hi. I take a probiotics for my health. And then I am prescribed antibiotics when I get sick. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that comes up for you a lot, Doc. Does one cancel out the other, and can you take both at the same time?
You could take both at the same time, but it's absolutely right. We've talked about this in the past, that it's very important to have some bacteria in your gut. So we have lots of bacteria, actually, in our large intestine, small intestine, it helps us with our digestive tract. So what happens when we take an antibiotic, even if it's for an antibiotic, let's say for a skin infection or for pneumonia, that antibiotic goes everywhere and knocks out what we call the normal gut flora. When that happens, people end up getting diarrhea. It's probably one of the biggest side effects of antibiotics. And the reason being is that that antibiotic now has knocked all that bacteria out, and the body now doesn't have the ability or what it needs to digest food, and therefore you get diarrhea. So, yeah, very important. People love probiotics, and especially after having antibiotics, probiotics are very important to get that gut flora back to normal so that you don't have the diarrhea.
So problem. Don't stop taking them.
No, you can continue to take.
Our own Wendy Snyder loves the probiotics.
Yes, she does.
She and her family take them.
I take one every day.
Do you?
I do, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. All right, Doc. The flu, I got this question over the weekend, and I know you get it all the time. How long does it take for the shot to take effect?
2 weeks. So you get that shot, and what happens is that's just turning on the immune system to say, this is what we don't like this season. Let's teach you how to look for it so that if we see it in the future, it's going to come back. So it takes 2 weeks, which is why really right now is so important, because as we get into Thanksgiving, a lot of travelers, we're starting to see some flu in the southeast. All we need is people going to the southeast and bringing it back, or people from the southeast coming here, and we'll spread the flu to much more quickly.
All right, and talking about how often I pee has really opened up the listeners to some real honesty here. So before this app, on the last word, 847, you ought to have the doc talk about this. It's not so important how many times you go a day, but what color it is. And if there is a, sorry about the detail here, kids, but if there's a light yellow, you're properly hydrated. It shouldn't be completely clear, and it shouldn't be darker in color. True?
True. You know, color is very important, and believe it or not, we do look at that. It can also give us ideas about other illnesses, possibly liver disease, kidney disease, so that's important. And we really, I mean, we kind of laugh about it, but we have a lot of people out in the country who have urinary incontinence, and whether that's due to a muscle or a nerve, so some of these apps will help a doctor actually make the diagnosis of why an individual has some loss of urine at times when they don't want to, and can lead to treatment options. So the app probably has its place in some individuals.
I am happy to tally how often you go. I am not prepared to take on any screenings of what actually comes out.
Well, it's weird because in our office, there's a little trap door where I can put a sample, and then it can only be collected. Only on iOS, which means all the majority of the world's phone users, the Android users, we don't have this. It's called PNC. This is something that was sent to me by a listener. PNC, a water reminder. You get reminders to drink water based on how often you go. So you log every time you go, and it lets you know if you need to drink more water. Oh, it's a miracle.
Well, we know the importance of hydration in our body. It keeps, you know, keeps us healthy. It certainly keeps our muscles strong and very important, but I'm not sure I need a reminder on that, but
Listen, you're a medical doctor.
That's
true. Thinking about this stuff anyway. It's Dr. Kevin Most, and thanks to you and everybody at Northwestern, especially the nurses at Northwestern Medicine. Hope you have a great Monday.
You got it. Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Doc.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here.